This is part of a series called Shape, Your Unique Individuality. And each one of those letters stands for a different aspect of your personality. S-H-A-P-E. S stands for spiritual gifts, and we had two talks on that. H stands for your heart. We also had two talks on that. A is for your abilities, which was also part one and part two. And this is called You've Got Personality. That's the P part of Shape. That'll be followed by E, or experience. And we like to just take our time with this and digress if the mood hits us. And so we may not get through all this material today. And if so, we'll do what we've pretty much done with all the other segments of it, is divide it up into part one and part two. If anyone would like to raise their hand when it gets to be 6 o'clock, then I'll know to kind of wind it down. This is called You've Got Personality. And most of us give lip service to the idea of our unique individuality, but do we really understand how unique each and every one of us are? There are 2 billion, there's 10 to the power of 2 billion zeros, different combinations and permutations of DNA. So many different combinations and permutations of DNA that if you were to write it out on paper, the paper would be 37,000 miles long just to write down the longest permutations of DNA. The universe itself consists of particles 10 to the 76 zero. So there are more combinations of DNA to make up different personality types than there actually are particles in this universe. Our talk today will be based on the teachings of the founder of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. I wonder if we can move that microphone stand just out there like that. So when we say that you're unique, it's not just a theological statement, it's a scientific fact of life. When Krishna, who's the name for God, made you, he broke the mold. There are no copies, there are no duplicates. There's never been, nor will there ever be anyone just like you. In the Bhagavad Gita 2nd chapter, Krishna says to his friend and disciple, by the way, if you're not familiar with Bhagavad Gita, it's the crest jewel of Indian philosophical and theological wisdom, and it's also the basis for all the different yoga systems that are practiced. In the Bhagavad Gita, which translated from the Sanskrit means the song of God, Krishna says to his friend and disciple Arjuna, Natu evahum jitu nasham, natum neme janadu paha, natchaiva nabhavishami, sarve vayam ataparam. Never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings, nor in the future shall any of us cease to be. So Krishna is a name for God, and as the absolute truth from which everything comes, all strength, all fame, all knowledge, all beauty, all wealth, and all humility originate in God. When we say God, to me, I don't know about you, but to me, God means power. It connotes that particular attribute of power. But in Vedic culture, the definition is absolute truth. Janmadi asya, that from which everything comes. That's God. Meaning, not only is God the source of power, but he's also the source of wealth, because he created everything, so therefore he owns everything. He's the source of knowledge. Just like the architect who created this building knows everything about this building, the plumbing, the electricity, the wiring. So who created everything, he knows everything, past, present, and future. Beauty, because God is all-powerful, there isn't any power above him which would force him to grow old. He doesn't have to do anything he doesn't want to do. So rather than saying God, which refers to only one of his attributes, we say the absolute truth. Or Krishna. Krishna means who has all wealth, all strength, all power, all beauty, all fame, all knowledge, and all renunciation. So he is multifaceted and unlimited in his personality. Sometimes people say, well, God is infinite. But infinite is an adjective. It's not a noun. So God is infinitely beautiful, infinitely intelligent, infinitely powerful, infinitely wealthy, and infinitely humble. Therefore, that's when we sum that up, what does that mean? That means his personality is infinite. That from which everything comes is not without personality, but rather he is billions and billions of times more personable than we are. And our personality traits are like borrowed plumes, which we have for a short period only. And we reflect. Just like you can see in this crystal chandelier, how many different hues and colors are coming in the crystals. What's happened is they've captured the sunlight. And that sunlight bounces around in there and creates certain beautiful hues. But the source of that light is the sunlight. You may say, well, it's electricity, but the source of electricity is sunlight. So God is the source of all personality and individuality, and we are like little crystals that catch up some of that and reflect it. And each and every one of us is unique. And there's enough of His personality to go around, to be distributed into each and every one of millions and millions and billions and trillions and zillions of countless living beings. And each and every one of them is still unique. And I'm not just talking about humans also. Humans talk and they breathe and they move around and they drive cars and they catch footballs and they play basketball. And they do all kinds of things that other living entities can't do. But people ask me, they come to the farm and they say, do you know all the llamas by name? Yeah, they're all personalities, each and every one of them. They're all unique. They're all special. You just have to get to know them. So, personality is all pervasive. It's unlimited. And it all comes from the one source, God. We define personality in several ways. It's how you think, how you act, and how you feel. And there are different takes on personality. Inherited, which means you bring it with you into this life. In other words, you had your personality as a spiritual entity, and then that personality is just reflected through the body that you have in this lifetime. And that's pretty much it for the most part. The clothes don't really make the man, but the clothes reflect the personality. Everyone dresses differently according to their personality. So we all have assumed different bodies in this lifetime because of a person personality which preceded this the acquisition of this body. And then after having taken birth and brought into this lifetime a certain personality, we are affected by environmental factors. That's certainly a fact, and become conditioned. And then, of course, we learn certain things. We make certain choices. And then those choices also help us learn and acquire other personality traits. But for the most part, you know, that old, those of you who have taken courses in psychology, nature or nurture, the debate went on for many, many years. Do we acquire our nature? Do we acquire it through our environment and our behavioral patterns? Or is it something that is nature, it is in our nature? And those of you who are parents would attest to the fact that no two babies come into this world alike. They all, even from birth, even from exiting the womb, they all have their individual personalities. And if you've ever sat at the dinner table and watched how differently some of your children act, you might have wondered, you know, how is it that from my loins, you know, all this diversity has come. It was stated somewhat by Wordsworth in a poem, Ode to Immortality, our birth is but a sleep. The fact that we bring our personality with us, that it precedes this body. Our birth is but a sleep and a forgetting. The soul that riseth with us, our life star hath had elsewhere its setting and cometh from afar. Not in entire forgetfulness nor in utter nakedness we come, but trailing clouds of glory from God who is our home. Heaven lies about us in our infancy. Shades of the prison house begin to close upon the growing boy. He beholds the light and whence it flows. He sees it in his joy. The youth who daily further from the east must travel, still is nature's priest, and by the vision splendid is on his way attended. At length the man perceives it die away and fade into the light of common day. Here are some kids, and I think you'll get the idea of what I'm talking about. He's got a drink in one hand, a cigar, and when he's in the old age home, when he's 80 years old, he'll be wheeling and dealing in the old age home, like that. And he's combative and confrontational, and he'll always be that way. And he's just so cute and friendly, and everyone approves of him, and he gets everyone's attention. And then this is our geek, this is our computer geek guy, the intellectual sort of fellow. They actually come into the world with the personalities which have preceded them. And personality influences every decision that you make. It influences how you deal with change or you don't deal with it, how you solve problems. It determines what makes you happy or sad, what you think is funny and what you don't think is funny. It says a lot about the kind of work you should be in and the kind of person that you should marry. And based on your personality, you're going to relate to God in a different way. It's a misconception that there's one perfect type of personality. It's a misconception that God just likes one type of person, or that there's one type of talent or aptitude or vocation which pleases God and everybody else is out of luck. God created each and every one of us differently because He enjoys what it is that we bring to the table. He enjoys the variety, and the perfect personality, quite simply, is that personality that uses what they've got in the service of the Lord. That's the criterion. That's the criterion. Just use what you've been given back in the service of He who gave it to you. So some people will relate to Krishna in a very quiet, meditative, contemplative sort of a way. Here's Lord Shiva on the altar. And Lord Shiva sits high in the Himalayas. He wears matted locks. Doesn't even bother to build a house for himself. And he chants on his Rudraksha. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. And he's deeply, deeply absorbed in meditation. And as such, he's called Mahadev, or the Lord of all the mystic yogis. Now, on the other hand, you have Bhima here, and we'll have more to say about him later. He had the strength of 10,000 elephants, and he was very much in the, what we call the mode of passion, or Rajagun. So he played out his love of God by fighting, by attacking and fighting and dueling and combating with the enemies of the Lord. He's a very, very loud, brash, emotional type of a guy. But he was perfect, and he was also perfect, because God enjoys all these varieties of personality. Now, the problem is that because we are all so different, if we don't learn to appreciate God from whom all these different personality traits come, and accept that people are different because God is unlimited, there's going to be lots of different people. But if we want to make everybody over in our own image, if instead of realizing that everything's created in God's unlimited image, but we want everyone to be a carbon copy of ourselves, then there's a huge, huge potential for conflict. You know, we can't just assume that everyone thinks and feels the way that we do because we're different. And most of the problems in life are people problems, and most of your people problems are because you don't understand that Krishna made us all differently. And this plays out in the family, it plays out in the workforce. Most people that can't hold down their jobs, the inability to do that is not because of being unskilled. It's much less often a case of being unskilled in the terms of what their job description is, and it's much more a case of just not getting along with people. Just not being able to get. So the people's skills are more important in the marketplace than the actual job skills themselves, if you have to give them various weights. And employers look primarily, of course, they want someone who can do the job. But if there's several people who are applying and equally qualified, the one that's going to get hired is the one that has proven people's skills. So what we need to do in order to resolve these conflicts or head them off is, number one, awareness. Be aware of personality differences. And when you realize how different we all are and how right that is, that we're all different, you'll exercise patience with other people. If you don't realize this difference, you'll misjudge them, you'll misunderstand them, you'll become impatient with them, and you'll be living your life in constant conflict and agitation. God has a sense of humor, and that's generally played out in the fact that many people marry their opposites. And this is just God's sense of humor, because the purpose of life is to learn how to appreciate others' differences. It's easy to get along with cool people like you, but that's not why we're put here. We're put here to learn how to get along with other people that are different from us. And sometimes God displays his sense of humor by putting us in a marriage situation where the partner is as opposite from us as it is possible to be. If one is extroverted, chances are the other one's introverted. If one likes variety, chances are the other likes routine. One likes structure, the other one may like lack of structure. And one is emotional, the other one tends to conceal their emotion. And isn't it funny that we're attracted during the dating process, we're often attracted to the person just because they're different than we are and they're interesting. And then, as soon as we're married, then we try to make them like us. So we go from the tunnel of love into the ocean of tedium. And then we wonder, 5 or 6 years down the line, where has love gone? They spell the word altar, A-L-T-E-R. Get it? When we go to the altar, we want to alter our mate. But that's a big mistake. That's a big mistake. So here are Bhima and Draupadi, and they're serving the Lord quite differently according to their different personalities. Ashwatthama, who's lying on the ground, the captain, did a heinous crime. After the great battle of Kurukshetra, which is described in the Mahabharata epic, Ashwatthama and two other cohorts went into a tent where all the victors on the Pandava side were lying and sleeping the sleep of death. They just fought for 18 days, they'd won the war, and they were sleeping a sleep of exhaustion. And Bhima and Arjuna and his three brothers, they had five teenage sons. The five Pandavas had five teenage sons who were also sleeping in that same tent. And Ashwatthama snuck into the tent and slaughtered all the sleeping soldiers, including the five teenage sons of the Pandavas. That was unheard of in those days. Warriors would meet each other in battle and face to face. Never would you approach or attack a unarmed or unaware foe. So Bhima, as I mentioned, who was very loud and very emotional and impulsive and brash, they captured Ashwatthama. I mean, after all, how would you feel someone slaughtered your teenage son? You'd want revenge, wouldn't you? You'd be hopping mad. And Bhima wants to kill Ashwatthama. But here is Draupadi. Now, Bhima's one son, each of the five brothers had one son by Draupadi. How she married five brothers is a whole other story. I won't get into that today. But Bhima, his one son was killed, and he wanted tit for tat. But Draupadi's five sons were killed. Her five sons were all killed. And she's appealing to Bhima, don't kill him. Show merciful. He's after all the son of the Brahmin Dronacharya. And we as a race give respect to the Brahmins even when they're not behaving properly. And in India you see that unfortunately. Those who have taken birth in Brahmin families get respect where in fact they don't deserve it. This is the unfair caste system that you've heard about. In the original idea of the caste system, one would become a Brahmin or an intellectual by aptitude and by training and not by birth. People would have the opportunity to place themselves in the social fabric according to their aptitude and their training. They wouldn't be walled in by birth. But nevertheless, many unqualified people take birth as sons of Brahmins and they're given the respective Brahmins, even though they smoke and they drink and they all do all kinds of low-class activities. Still, because they've taken birth as sons of Brahmins, they get the respect, which it shouldn't be that way. So, in any case, Draupadi, she was a very simple, pious lady. All she knew was that Ashwatthama's father was a Brahmin, and Ashwatthama, even though he was a criminal, he's the son of a Brahmin, and she says, we should respect the Brahminical culture, and so please don't kill him. Now, both were great devotees of Krishna. Bhima was a great devotee of Krishna, and Draupadi was a great devotee of Krishna, and there's Krishna there, somewhat restraining Bhima. So what are you going to do? Bhima wants revenge, and Draupadi wants mercy. What are you going to do? They're both devotees. This is the way that they serve the Lord according to their different personalities. What are you going to do? Krishna makes a suggestion. He says, rather than kill him physically, kill his reputation. For a warrior, dishonor is worse than death. For a warrior, he would rather die than be dishonored. So Krishna, and this was Krishna's plan all along, he was working through Bhima on the one hand and through Draupadi on the other hand to create what was apparently a conflict, but he had the solution in mind all along, and the solution was to cut off his top knot. The top knot was like the honor, the symbol of the honorable warrior. And if that top knot was cut off, he would be dishonored. And that would be a fate worse than death. So Krishna says to Bhima, why kill him? You can do something a lot worse than killing him. You can dishonor him. Bhima was then satisfied. And Draupadi was mollified because he got to retain his life. But the point is that this was Krishna's plan all along, and because both these personalities were Krishna conscious, the best result came about. And this is a lesson to those of you who are parents, who do have different children with very, very different personalities. Don't try to make over your child in your own mold. Recognize that those children are different from you, and don't try to push them into some preconceived occupation or classes because you want them to be a certain way. Acknowledge their interests, their skills, and maybe just take a back seat once in a while. You might rather they do one thing, but if they show interest in something else, go with that. Don't artificially try to put them into some preconceived mold. If a squirrel knows climbing, then why should it have to be forced to learn how to fly? Right? If a bird knows flying, why should you force the bird to climb? Just because you think climbing is a more useful, higher paying skill. It's not about what you think, it's about what their personality is. Now here's another example. Bhima and Yudhishthir were, Bhima, of course, we've talked about him, and Yudhishthir was another one of the Pandava brothers who was very intellectual, very peaceful, very regal. And the Pandavas were sent into exile. They were lured into a game of dice. The dice were loaded and they were cheated out of their kingdom and forced to go into exile for 14 years. When this became evident that they would have to give up their crowns and their jewels and just go off penniless into the forest, two very, very different reactions. Bhima, he said, this isn't Bhima, this is Yudhishthir. Bhima said, they cheated. They cheated. So we're not bound by the result. Let's just go back and kill them all and take over the kingdom. Because they cheated, so it's null and void. We don't have to honor this. They cheated. So let's just go back and kill them and take over the kingdom. It's ours anyway. And then in answer to the objection, they said, well, that would be sinful, killing people. He said, that's all right. Once you're kings, you know, we can do so much good. We'll counteract it. You know, whatever sin we incurred, whatever bad karma, we'll just do a lot of good. We'll have all the royal treasure at our disposal. We'll help a lot of people out. We'll put some old age homes up. We'll build some wells. We'll protect the cows. And if we get some bad effect from it, we'll, you know, wealth can compensate for a number of faults. But Yudhishthir, on the other hand, he said, you know, this is great. This is wonderful. This is the Lord's arrangement. We get to go into the forest for 14 years. We get to relax. We get to chill out. We get to be next to nature. It says, God made the country and man made the city. So Yudhishthir was only too happy to go off into the forest. And he said, if we're going to be kings anyway, Krishna will make us kings. All this is a time period during which we're going to be tested and we're going to be matured and we're going to be tempered. And we're going to become spiritually fit so that when the 14 years are over, if Krishna decides to give us our kingdom back, we'll be much better rulers than the one who cheated us and sat in comfort and luxury for 14 years. So this is part of Krishna's arrangement. And indeed it was. But the point is, they were both Krishna conscious, but they had entirely different personalities. So be aware of the differences. Be aware that God created everyone different. And secondly, to reduce the potential of conflict, accept. Don't just be aware of it, but accept the personality differences. You know, we have an international society. There are 400 temples all over the world. And there are all kinds of devotees. You can't say that one type of person becomes a devotee. There's all kinds of people that have become devotees. There's graduates from Indian Institute of Technology. There's Yale graduates. There's Harvard graduates. There's people that were suicidal. There are people that were addicted to drugs. There were people that were middle class people. There were people that, you know, butchers, bakers, candlestick makers. You know, everybody became it. And actually, most of those people would not be together in any sort of a social setting. They just wouldn't be friends and acquaintances in any other setting. But because of coming into Krishna consciousness and acknowledging Krishna or God as the common father and ourselves as all spiritual kin, kith and kin, then, and accepting that, then an international society for Krishna consciousness is possible. Where all kinds of people who normally wouldn't interact, who wouldn't even get along, do so. And it's not paradise. I mean, they still have their differences of opinion. Don't let me mislead you there. But because it's in a context of accepting, it's with a premise of accepting others' personality differences, that we work our differences out and we actually get along. In fact, this is something that we've told before. We were just talking with Subhakrit here just about an hour ago. Subhakrit came about a month ago, and he's what I call a pakora devotee. He's a pakora devotee. Pakora is a traditional Indian dish. So if you're a conservative devotee, then we call you a pakora devotee. Because he attends all the programs, he chants his 16 rounds in the temple room, he's clean, he's pakka, he's very, very brahminical, he's always watching Prabhupada in the video and so on and so forth. So that's what we call a pakora devotee. And my wife and I, we're more like pizza devotees. Pizza is not a traditional Indian dish. As far as I know, the great saints and sages of the Himalayas didn't order out to Domino's. it's a more recent, innovative dish. For instance, last night we had a wedding here, and he was Guatemalan, she was Mexican, and we did the wedding ceremony, and they had shoes, and my wife had forgotten to get shoe coverings for them, and they had high heels, and so they didn't want to take off their shoes because it was part of their costume, and she had forgotten to get shoe coverings. So we got some little plastic bags, you know, and we tied them around their ankles with rubber bands, you know, so. But, you know, they work their way through, you know, the high heels and stuff like that, you know. And I noticed by the end of the ceremony, you know, there were some shoes on the floor. I mean, it was, you know, it's certainly not something we condone, but it happened, you know, it just happened. And if Subhakrit weren't the loving, forgiving, gentle person he was, he would be coming up screaming to me and by Bobby that we've allowed the desecration of the temple. But it's not right, it's not wrong, it's just these things happen. When you're trying to run the temple and make some funds and pay the bills, sometimes you just have to do some things that you just can't do when you're just being very, very strict and conservative. And it's not that one's right or one's wrong, but they're both needed. And as long as we appreciate each other, then we have a wonderful, harmonious society. And Krishna uses both the pizza and the pakora, right, Subha? I hope he's going to agree with me here. Or he's going to say, yeah, you did desecrate the temple last night, you demon, you. Accept others just as Krishna. You know why we need to accept other people? Because we need acceptance. If you don't cut people some slack, if you don't show them grace, then when you need it, then don't ask for it, because you don't deserve it. You're not going to get what you're not willing to give. We all make mistakes. And how many people in this room, after having made a mistake with your family members or your spouse or your kids, how many after having made a mistake actually found that as a result of that mistake and the grace that was showed, your relationship became stronger afterwards. How many of you have an instance like that? Where through a mistake, and if you hadn't made the mistake, your relationship wouldn't have gotten stronger, isn't it? It's a well-known medical fact that when you break a bone, the bone heals back even stronger. So making mistakes is part of life, and giving grace is part of maturing in your relationships as well. If you look up to Krishna, you will not look down on people because you realize that He made them all. Differences are not a matter of right or wrong, good or bad. They're just different. Krishna made differences. And this is a picture of Hanumanji, and he's always looking up to Lord Rama. This is a quote by one of our senior devotees, Ravindra Sarup. He's the president since many years of the Philadelphia Temple. And he writes about Prabhupada, our Guru Maharaj. He says, "I learned this truth. As we grow smaller, love of God grows greater. As love of the Lord discovers no upper limit, humility finds no lower. Great souls yearn to become less and less, not more and more." And the problem is that when you criticize someone else, you're using yourself as a reference point. Basically, when you criticize someone for being too emotional, you're basically saying they shouldn't be so emotional, they should be like you. Or when you're criticizing someone for being structured, you're saying they should be unstructured like me. So you need to make allowances for other people being different and doing that because you love them. That can save your marriage. Stop trying to make your mate to be like you. Not only be aware of differences, but also accept them. And this is my favorite one. Appreciate. Appreciate. You know, we talk a lot about tolerating other religions, other cultures. What are we, a mosquito bite or something? You know, poison ivy that you got to tolerate us? You know, thanks a lot for tolerating us. Great, you know. But, you know, there's so much to appreciate in other cultures and other religions. There's so much to celebrate. What is it? Tolerate. And I will venture to say that those LDS missionaries who go to far and wide parts of the world, and I know quite a few actually, returned missionaries, and I know enough actually to be able to say that those missionaries who accultured themselves to the local environment, who were willing to sit and listen to what the local people had to say and how they saw things, and are willing to go to the local festivals and not tolerate but enjoy them, those were the most successful missionaries. Those were the most successful missionaries. So appreciate what a boring world it would be if these differences didn't exist. What an unbalanced world it would be if these differences didn't exist. What if your body was just all ears? What if it was just ears? What if these were ears, these were ears, ears? How would you eat? You know, how would you see if you had ears here? It's right? What if your body was just all eyes? You wouldn't hear any beautiful music. You wouldn't smell any wonderful flowers. We need eyes, we need ears, we need tongue, we need... And then all over the body, we have this big sense. We have this big sense, which is the sense of touch. What if we just had this sheath? What if we just had this tactile sheath, but no eyes, no mouth, no ears? What kind of a life would that be? So differences create balance, and balance makes things interesting. You don't just eat with your spoon, you also use the knife and fork, right? Have a profound respect for one another. How do I appreciate somebody with negative characteristics? Look behind and see a negative character trait is often a positive trait being misused. Someone who's hypercritical, maybe that person has the gift of discernment, but they're just misusing it. Someone is bossy all the time, maybe that person has the gift of leadership, but they're just misusing it. Someone who's impulsive all the time, maybe that person has the gift of flexibility, but they're misusing it. So those of you who have notebooks, here's your homework assignment, okay? Wait a minute, it's coming up here. Look behind the negative and see what's being misused and how it could be properly channeled. Many of your children, rather than trying to change their negative points, help them to realize that properly disciplined and brought under control and directed, that can be the source of their very success. So here's your homework for next week. Figure out how all these traits can be more... figure out what personality gift they represent and how they could be more properly channeled. All right? Are you writing all these down here? If you're a teacher, you've seen all of these, maybe not simultaneously. Repeatedly sharpening pencil. Figure out what personality trait that is and how to properly channel it, okay? Make spaces in the window. Yeah, figure that one out and channel it. Sticking out foot to trip other kids. Figure that one out and channel it. See, passing notes. Figure that one out and channel it. Hallucinating, making cat noises, drawing cartoons, jabbing kids' back, playing imaginary harmonica. That's an interesting one. Snapping gum, belching, pretending to work, cursing the teacher under the breath, reading a comic book, throwing small objects at random, carving up the desk, yawning and stretching. Have you noticed that the world is becoming increasingly less functional? That the world is becoming increasingly dysfunctional? And why do you think that might be? Because very, very few people have understood or appreciated the variety that Krishna has built into this world. You know, you say, well, I don't think anybody understands me. I don't think anybody accepts me. I don't think anybody appreciates me. But that's because you don't understand where you come from. You don't understand Krishna. Krishna understands you. He's situated in your heart. He made you to be what you are. Krishna accepts you. It doesn't mean he approves of everything you do, but there is nothing you could do that he'll ever reject you. There's no horrible act that you could do where he'd ever say, okay, that's it. I cut you off. I'm finished with you. There's nothing you can do that he will ever, ever not accept you. He will always accept you, and he'll also always appreciate you. But he'll appreciate you for what he made you to be, so why not use those personality traits in the service of the Lord? And if you'll commit to him, he'll help you develop the personality that he gave you to its highest potential. I think that will suffice for this week.